While presidents, prime ministers and policy makers around the world hope they've somehow managed to avoid a total financial meltdown, lawyers and regulators are starting to take action against some of the bankers they say are responsible.
I think the banks believed they were above the law, and I think it's clear that they thought they could get away with anything, and apparently they did.
In this BBC programme, we hear what some of these investigations claim to have uncovered, and we delve deep into the complex financial engineering bankers created to fuel the housing boom, to reveal yet another massive potential source of losses for the financial system, a time bomb so big it could trigger another bust.
The reason we're in a state of panic now is no one knows where the bottom is, and the bottom could be very, very deep.
It's a mess. A lot of people losing their job, losing their home, losing everything.
Mike's shoeshine stall on 7th Avenue, New York, is right outside what used to be the headquarters of Lehman Brothers, the American financial giant which declared itself bankrupt last month.
I worry about the working guy, you know, who got that pension and all, and getting screwed, you know.
Like most of his customers, Mike blames Dick Fuld, Lehman's chief executive officer, for the 150-year-old institution's collapse.
I'm glad the CEO gone, but I'm not glad the worker. You know what I mean?
The CEO, happy to see him go.
Yeah.
Chief exec.
Yeah, get rid of all of those. Just keep the little guy, man, the one that's doing the work.
Committee will come back to order. Richard S. Fuld, Jr., Chairman and CEO of Lehman Brothers. He's been the chairman.
Earlier
CEO
this month, Dick Fuld appeared on Capitol Hill in Washington to face members of Congress fired up by widespread anger against bankers among their constituents.
Your company is now bankrupt. Our economy is in a state of crisis. But you get to keep $480 million. I have a very basic question for you. Is this fair?
Mr. Chairman,
Dick Fuld told the committee he hadn't made quite that much money.
I think for the years that you're talking about here, I believe my cash compensation was close to $60 million, which you have indicated here. And I believe the amount that I took out of the company over and above that was, I believe, a little bit less than $250 million. Still a large number, though.
Still a large amount of money. You have a $14 million oceanfront home in Florida. You have a summer vacation home in Sun Valley, Idaho.
I saw a brief clip of it in the TV. He seemed to have a difficult 2 hours. It's a typical reaction. He's trying not to say very, very much.
Dean Morris had a good reason to look in on Dick Fuld's interrogation. He's in charge of a UK pension scheme and is also the chief complainant in a lawsuit against Lehman's, accusing the bank of deliberately misleading investors.
If there has been any alleged wrongdoing by Dick Fuld or any of the directors in the company, I would hope that they would go through a legal process to have them penalised to get their comeuppance.
The building where Lehman's used to be is this huge skyscraper right in front of me, in the heart of Manhattan, just down from Theatreland. All the Lehman signs have gone now, and instead you see Barclays because they bought bits and pieces of what was left. But it's what happened in the weekend that Lehman's came to grief that is really most startling. On the Saturday morning, as the bank was struggling to survive, its losses were assessed at around $30 billion. By the Sunday night, the same weekend, its losses were assessed at $80 billion, $50 billion more, and the bank was forced into bankruptcy. But that huge difference in the assessment of how deeply Lehman was in the hole is the most graphic example of how little anyone really seemed to know about what was going on inside this pillar of America's financial aristocracy.
With a complex bank like Lehman's, it's never easy, especially in the final stages of a collapse, to be 100% precise about the value of the loans on its books. On Capitol Hill, Dick Fuld told sceptical politicians that he was in no way to blame for his bank's collapse.
The crisis in confidence that permeated the markets led to an extraordinary run on the bank. In the end, despite all of our efforts, we were overwhelmed.
Did you mislead your investors? And I remind you, sir, you're under oath.
No, sir. We did not mislead our investors. And to the best of my ability at the time, given the information that I had, We made disclosures that we fully believed were accurate.
But to the lawyers now targeting Lehman's, Dick Fuld's denials about misleading investors don't wash. They say fuzzy accounting is part of a pattern going back 2 years, with top executives time and again painting a falsely rosy picture of Lehman's financial condition.
When a company intentionally misrepresents its financial statements, which caused its price to go up, and then subsequently comes down because they disclosed all those positive statements were false, that's fraud.
Robert Roseman is part of the team of American-based lawyers seeking to prove that Lehman's directors knowingly misled shareholders about the state of the bank.
The reality is that they had much more subprime exposure than what they publicly portrayed, and eventually when everything fell apart, it was basically a house of cards. The company had to write down a tremendous amount of monies, and which caused the price of the stock to collapse.
Like most of the steadily growing number of cases against the banks, the Lehman's action is still at an early stage and will no doubt be strenuously defended. But some investigators have already got a result. In Boston, Massachusetts, just up the coast from New York, state regulators have been investigating Merrill Lynch, another once-proud American banking giant forced into a shotgun takeover on the same weekend that Lehman's went bust. Here, investigators are set out to show that Merrill had sold complex financial products to individuals and to cities, which they described as super safe, but which collapsed in value the moment the credit crunch began to bite. Faced with evidence gathered by the Massachusetts team, Merrill agreed to a multi-million dollar settlement.
I think the banks believed they were above the law. They put their profits above their own customers repeatedly. And I think it's clear that they thought they could get away with anything, and apparently they did.
Massachusetts Secretary of State William Galvin, the state's most senior law official, says he's proud of the investigation into Merrill Lynch and of the settlement achieved. He says in bank investigations across America, a pattern is beginning to emerge.
We have been able to uncover sufficient evidence in a number of cases that indicated the upper echelon of the industry knew there were high risks here. We've seen email evidence. Indeed, we've taken testimony where some of these individuals were selling their own stakes in these things because of personal concern about the instability of the marketplace. There was a conspiracy of silence to continue this show. And as a result, we've come up with this incredible mess. I don't think a prosecutor is going to have much difficulty in finding ample opportunities to prove that the level of knowledge was here.
And how serious an offense is that here in the U.S.?
Well, you can go to jail. And I think in this instance, the American public is going to demand it. I think the American public is going to demand criminal prosecution.
The FBI has already opened inquiries into over 24 financial institutions involved in selling and repackaging those now notorious, no-questions-asked home loans which fueled the house price explosion. Countrywide, once America's biggest mortgage provider, is among them. And now lawyers acting for former Countrywide shareholders are also targeting the company.
A growing family with a lot of debt. A young couple with no down payment. A business owner whose income was hard to document. Every one of them was turned down for a home loan by 3 different lenders. I'm with Countrywide, and I got them all approved.
During the boom, Countrywide's TV ads proudly proclaimed they'd lend to people other banks turned down. And Countrywide told anyone who raised concerns that was okay, because they carefully assessed borrowers' ability to pay. Jim Fuchs, who works for America's third biggest pension fund, says Countrywide's message that they were the most conservative lenders in the industry was untrue. Instead, he claims Countrywide changed its credit scores to make risky subprime mortgages seem safe.
We have found in our investigation that Countrywide specifically manipulated the definitions of prime and subprime.
What's the importance of their having reduce the credit score?
You lower that score, more risky borrowers are now in a category that one at first glance would think, oh, they're in the prime categories. Loan quality was sacrificed in favor of loan quantity.
The question of whether a mortgage was prime or subprime was a critically important question.
Professor Michael Greenberger of the University of Maryland School of Law has been both a top American financial regulator and an attorney general in the U.S. Department of Justice.
if the mortgage lender is fooling around with the creditworthiness, in other words, somebody is less creditworthy, and changing the definition of prime and subprime, and that wasn't accounted for, that's going to end up being a very serious problem, I believe.
So far, we've heard there are lawsuits against Countrywide and Lehman's. Merrill Lynch has settled claims against it in Massachusetts, but this is only the beginning. The British bank Barclays is being sued by a French company which says Barclays transferred risky mortgages from its own books to investments it had previously sold to them. Barclays had marketed these investments as super safe, but soon after the mortgage transfers, they were worthless. The French company's American lawyer, Jeff Jarvis, said that cost his clients tens of millions of dollars. Investors overall lost many hundreds of millions.
It's our strong belief that Barclays knew what they were doing and didn't want this stuff on their books, knowing it was worth less, and so moved it to our books.
If I've understood you right, what you're saying is that the only reason Barclays authorized these expansions at a time you say it was terribly unfavorable was to take losses off their books and dump them on these investments. Is that basically what you're saying?
Well, I don't know what was in Barclays' mind exactly. If they had some other motivation other than to save losses in mind, they know that and I don't, but that certainly was the impact of it all.
This is not the only case where a bank is accused of moving loss-making mortgages off its books onto complex investments held by outside parties. In Southern California, Patrick Daniels, a lawyer representing large numbers of investors who lost money in similar investments, claims a pattern is emerging.
The investment banks, they held tens of billions of dollars of these securities on their own books. They've got a whole backlog of product that they needed to clear out the warehouse.
They want to package it off and sell it to someone else.
And that accelerated in the fourth quarter of 2006 and through the first two quarters until June and through the summer of 2007. The pace at which these instruments were packaged accelerated, and you can see that quite clearly in the deals and how quickly they went bad after being sold off.
Patrick Daniels is now also taking action against some of the ratings agencies which investors relied on to assess just how risky the various components of banks' complex investment products really were. Because these products were so hard to understand, the ratings from the agencies were more important than ever before. But Patrick Daniels claims that as the subprime crisis deepened, some of the agencies bent over backwards to provide the super-safe AAA ratings banks wanted.
The evidence that we've seen so far is that with this increased pressure, the rating agencies even further relaxed their models, relaxed some of their assumptions in order for these late deals to receive the ratings that they did.
Are you implying that they were dishonest?
Yes, absolutely. I think they were. They bear a great deal of culpability. They are right up there, hand in hand with the investment banks who packaged these deals and sold them off to investors. No matter how energetic an investment banker promoter would have been, without the assistance of the rating agencies, these deals could not and would not have been sold.
And what would the effect of that be?
We'd not be dealing with the crisis that we have today.
Patrick Daniels is not alone in making such claims. A report from America's top regulator, the Securities and Exchange Commission, published in July, also highlights potential conflicts of interest in the relationship between ratings agencies and banks and recommends reform. Other lawyers are pursuing this idea. Jeff Jarvis, who's suing Barclays, is also alleging that the biggest ratings agency, S&P, failed to protect investors who bought the complex financial products Barclays was selling. In 2007, he says, S&P formally confirmed that the deal transferring mortgages from Barclays to the investments held by his clients would not in any way affect their super-safe AAA ratings, but it didn't turn out that way. S&P suddenly downgraded them by an astounding 17 notches, turning gold into rubbish.
We got a AAA rating in July and got it downrated to what they call junk status in August. And a fairly rated instrument, that just shouldn't happen. What happened is pretty unusual and suggests that something improper may have occurred. And we certainly alleged in our complaint that we believe that something improper occurred. All I know is it was AAA in July and junk in August. Usually a notch or two in a month is like a big move, and here it was 17 notches in a month. It fell and fell and fell. Why? Hopefully we tend to find out in this lawsuit.
Both Barclays and S&P declined to be interviewed. They both gave us almost identical 11-word statements. Here's Barclays first.
This action has no merit, and we will contest it vigorously.
Now the statement from S&P.
These complaints are without merit, and we will defend them vigorously.
The allegations behind many of the cases we've looked at are similar. That a combination of complex financial engineering with favourable risk ratings from the agencies made it possible for bankers to disguise the true level of the risk investors faced. But there's yet another mechanism designed to reassure investors which is now having the opposite effect, and it's potentially terrifying. It's called a credit default swap. Credit default swaps are private insurance contracts between banks, hedge funds, even rich individuals, essentially bets that an investment, even a really complex one, will go on paying what it promised. The credit default swap market is completely unregulated, although tens of trillions of dollars worth are already thought to be in circulation. Washington-based lawyer Jack Blum, a veteran financial investigator, says this lack of regulation meant there was no way to check that the people involved in these swaps actually had the cash to back up their promises.
The way I describe this is a couple of one-legged drunks propping each other up. When you slice through it all this credit default swap does is give the patina of security to debt instruments and arrangements which really aren't worth much.
And if things go wrong, what happens?
What happens is everybody's looking to everybody else who has nothing to pay with. And what we get out of that is a death spiral. Death spiral means I go to collect mine from somebody who can't pay me. And in turn, I'm supposed to pay somebody else, but now I can't pay him because I couldn't collect from the other guy. And it's a circle. This downward circle of nobody can pay anybody else that is what I fear is the next step in this default swap business.
Stock markets around Europe have fallen sharply. During the past week, shares in London have lost more than 20% of their value. More than £91 billion has been wiped off the stock market today.
While stock markets around the world were crashing earlier this month, officials in New York were struggling to estimate how big the credit default swap bill from the now bankrupt Lehman's was likely to be. Their guess was something over $200 billion, a huge loss, and one which has contributed to the present financial chaos. The bad news is the Lehman's credit default swaps are only a tiny percentage of the total now out there. Former top regulator Michael Greenberger says the swap market grew so massive because as long as house prices went on rising, there were so few claims on the insurance it provided.
It was insurance without backing, and the people who were issuing the insurance were part of this utopian group who said, oh, this is a risk-free investment. Housing prices will always go up. Mortgages will always be paid. The insurance won't have to be paid, and we're getting premiums. It's like we're insuring the fact that the sun will rise in the east in the morning. Well, much to the surprise of everyone, the sun, figuratively speaking, rose in the west. That is to say, housing prices dropped. People needed to collect on the so-called insurance that wasn't regulated like insurance. The capital reserves weren't there. And most of these big losses can't be paid off. These contracts are exploding. And every time they explode, you're talking about billions and billions of dollars. And we don't know where they're held. They are all over the place. And as the economy sinks, these insurance policies get triggered faster and faster. And they come up and bite you in the rear.
But the size of loss, I mean, does anyone have any idea? Look, I mean, what is your guess?
I wouldn't even begin to guess. The figure is very, very high. The fact of the matter is the losses are potentially unending.
both sides of the Atlantic now echo to the sound of regulatory stable doors being slammed. But according to Chris Dixon, a former director of Britain's Serious Fraud Office and now head of the Accountants Joint Disciplinary Body, when it comes to investigation of what went wrong, there's a major difference. While American criminal, civil and political investigations are rapidly picking up pace, in Britain, where so much of the financial engineering actually happened, he says very little is going on.
As far as regulatory and criminal investigations are concerned, of course, that's a matter both for the FSA and for the authorities. And we haven't heard of anything happening there. It's not often that one sees the sort of intensive criminal investigation or indeed regulatory investigation that one sees in the United States.
Why do you think that is?
It's just not the way, I'm afraid, things are done here.
But why not? Clearly something massive has happened and we're threatened with economic depression. Isn't it something we ought to find out about?
Yes, one thought it most certainly is something that should be found out about. We need to find out what has gone on and where people have transgressed. I think it's extremely important that they're called to account. It is depressing that nothing is happening.
As governments round the world start to take over the banking system to try to avoid financial collapse, Michael Greenberger says there's a final twist to this story. Because if the lawyers do eventually succeed in winning huge damages from banks on behalf of the investors they represent, guess who'll have to pay?
It's the highest form of irony here. We started out saying the free market is king and the government is in the way, and we end up with the government owning the financial services system and picking up the tab for the mistakes.
So the governments are going to pick up the tabs?
Absolutely. And that means you and me.